About 150 days ago, Wisconsin voters elected a new generation of leaders from the U.S. Senate down to the State Assembly. Those leaders in the state capitol took office about 100 days ago, and what 100 days it's been. First of all, you had Governor Walker submitting a bold plan to the Assembly and Senate, which has passed much of it. Then you had probably the largest protest in Wisconsin history, which didn't like Governor Walker's agenda. Then you just had a Supreme Court race that attracted 1.5 million votes and apparently decided by just 7,000. And now you're beginning to see recalls, potential recalls involving state senators. It's been amazing to cover, but I don't understand it, which is why I've invited two political scientists from the UW-Madison to help sort it out to all of us. Kathy Walsh Kramer, thank you very much for coming in. Barry Burton, thank you.
Sure thing.
Been a few months, and what a few months we have seen. We've all watched it. Let me ask you this as an overview question before we get into some details. What's been the biggest surprise to you professionally as political scientists in the last 100 days? Kathy, you want to go first?
I would say the intensity of the protests were pretty surprising. I mean, there's always a subset of the population that's really intensely watching what's going on in state government and government at all levels, but to see just the intensity of feelings on both sides and the number of people showing up at the state capitol day after day was surprising to me.
Did you go up there as a scholar just to watch
it? Sure,
I
did. I did. Sure, I did.
Pretty amazing scenes, right?
Yeah.
I've never seen the capitol that full of emotionally engaged people.
Yeah.
Barry, your answer, biggest surprise?
I'm really going to echo what Kathy said. To get something like 100,000 people there protesting in the snow, below freezing temperatures on a Saturday, people taking their free time.
Right.
With kids and jobs and other obligations was really amazing.
And
to see 14 Democratic senators flee the state, I thought that was something that happened in Texas. but I think those two things fed each other. To have the senators out of state and the protesters here, I think they were sort of, you know, compensating for each other.
Either of you having any doctoral students just write about the protest in terms of a thesis or anything?
Not yet.
Not yet.
There could be some students joining our program because things are so fascinating here right now.
Yeah, we really are. Let's go to what Governor Walker said the day after the Supreme Court election. And the governor said this at a press conference. You have two very different worlds in this state. You've got a world driven by Madison and a world driven by everybody else. Wisconsin is not a red state. It's not a blue state. In many ways, it's a purple state. As political scientists, Kathy, you want to go first again?
Sure.
What's your reaction
to
that?
Well, yes and no is how I feel about it. So if you look at the returns from the election just last week, it's not just Madison voting one way and the rest of the state voting the other. It's kind of the divide in a way was sort of west versus east, if you will, and that's very overgeneralizing it. But there is a very strong perception, especially in so-called outstate Wisconsin, that it's Madison versus the rest of the state. I mean, many people, especially in smaller towns, rural communities in Wisconsin, perceive that, you know, all the resources are sucked in by Madison and diverted to Milwaukee or spent on Madison, and people in outstate Wisconsin don't get to experience that. There's also a sense that all the decisions are made in Madison and not in other parts of the state. And so there is a kind of Madison versus the rest of the state divide. It's not, I would say, it's not really the case that there are two different ways of living or two different worlds in Wisconsin, but that perception that there is, I think, is exactly what he's tapping into.
So are we a purple state, given the way we, a year ago, a Democratic governor, two Democratic U.S. senators, and a Democratic wedge?
I guess so. In a way, it seems like we're a blue state and a red state, because there are some parts of the state that are very blue and some that are very red. So the cities, Madison and Milwaukee primarily, very blue. The northwest corner tends to be pretty blue. Menominee County tends to be pretty blue. And then there, in the suburbs around Milwaukee, very red. And then the other counties over the past few elections, gubernatorial and presidential, have fluctuated. So they're more purpley, but there are parts that are pretty blue and pretty red. So I guess a little of both. Some purple and then intensity on both sides.
Barry, your reaction to the governor's statement?
I think he's about half right.
Which half, sir?
We'll try to make that clear. So I think it's a purple state for the reasons you said, but there aren't many places in the state that are actually purple. If you look at the Supreme Court returns from last week, a lot of the counties are strongly on one side or the other.
There aren't
a lot of counties that are 50-50 the way the overall state is. So I think he's right that we're purple on average, especially at the presidential level. I think what he's wrong about is in pointing to Madison as being an outlier, and it's simply a matter of perspective. If there were a Democratic governor, he would say Waukesha County, Washington County, mm-hmm. those Milwaukee suburbs are outliers, and they'd both be right. I mean, those are the extreme ends of the political spectrum in the state, and in some ways they balance each other.
Let me ask this before we look at the county by counties on the Supreme Court. Is this split healthy, do you think? Is this a healthy political dialogue?
Oh, boy. No, I would say at the moment, I mean, you mind me going first? Partly the reason I say that is, so as part of my work of studying public opinion in the state, I go out to places and invite myself into coffee clutches and
restaurants.
Yeah, and so far, my experience has been people do not want to talk about it. They have a sense that their buddies around the table have different points of view, and so they just avoid it altogether, which to me is not healthy. It's great to have differences of opinions if you can share those different perspectives and engage one another and have kind of democratic banter. But if the divide is so intense right now that people can't even talk to each other about it,
right.
That's not healthy.
Barry, your thought?
Yeah, I'm agreeing with everything Kathy says, and I'd agree with that. You're just at the point where there's a stereotype about how folks on the other side act, what they're like, what their interests are, and it's hard to overcome that. You know, if you're in Madison, the stereotypes about folks who live in those western Milwaukee suburbs are of one kind, and if you live in those areas, stereotypes about folks from Dane County are equally wrong, and it makes it impossible for a kind of dialogue to happen. And in the legislature, you've got members from both of those parts of the state who, in theory, need to work together to make the legislative process work, and they're not talking at this point.
So you're not surprised then when we at Wisconsin Eye, we wanted to go on the road to a Southwest Wisconsin paint store, asked them to come in and have some of their regular customers over coffee talk about what was happening in the Capitol.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm not going to invite you in because there's such polarity. I don't want to lose customers.
I absolutely believe it.
You believe that?
Absolutely.
Wow, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Barry, you mentioned the county by county returns on the Supreme Court. Let's take a look at a graphic of that. Barry, go first. Let me try to set you up this way and correct me. Is that a picture of two Wisconsins, do you think?
In parts of the state, I think it is. In the southern part of the state, there's a pretty deep east-west cleavage. The exceptions being Milwaukee County and the
Kenosha
and just outside the Chicago suburbs there.
Yes.
Aside from that, you've got, you know, really those two or three counties that ring around Milwaukee versus Dane and Rock and Iowa and the counties to the west of
Waukesha,
that.
Waukesha, Ozaukee, Washington. Yes, mm-hmm. sir.
I think in the northern part of the state, it's much more mixed. Those counties, mm-hmm. you see them move back and forth from a governor's election to a presidential election.
Yeah.
This one happens to look a lot like the 2004 presidential election, which is surprising because this is a nonpartisan race, spring election. It's really one race on the ballot, and so for it to mimic what we think is one of the most partisan and intense races we ever see is really shocking.
So that map that we just looked at, that looks like the 2004 presidential?
Right, yeah.
How does it look compared to the last November election for governor? If we overlaid on that map Prosser perceived as a Republican, Walker, and Kloppenburg a Democrat, Barrett, are we going to have roughly the same mix? No?
They're close, but Walker did better than Prosser. Walker got 52% mm-hmm. of the vote. Prosser's right at 50%. So there are a few counties that moved in the interim, you know, who would have gone for Walker but went for Prosser. So, and I think those are mostly upstate, northwest part of the state. But in the southern part of the state, I think that red-blue, or in this case purple-orange divide, looks about the same as it did last fall.
Kathy, your thought on that, mm-hmm. County by county?
Yeah, I'd agree. So the parts that are blue, I should qualify that. So the northwest corner, the Dane County, Milwaukee County, you know, didn't go for Walker. So it's really the other counties, kind of the middle tier of the state, that there was some flipping back and forth. So they don't, the map for the gubernatorial race looks a lot redder than the Prosser Kloppenburg map.
Well, the Supreme Court race came just after the protests, of course, and a little bit of while the protests were still ongoing. Well, was there a lot of linkage? Here's my question. Prosser had been around Wisconsin politics in the Capitol for 32 years, 18 years in the Assembly, then a tax appeals commissioner, then appointed to the Supreme Court, won election to the Supreme Court. Joanne Kloppenburg had been a top-level prosecutor with the Department of Justice, never run for office, sought to be named a judge, and turned down. How does a virtual unknown come within 7,000 votes of defeating someone? Was it the linkage to the protest?
I think so, absolutely.
Absolutely?
Yeah. And partly because many of the campaign, I wouldn't even say campaign slogans, but what people wrote on their yard signs and such was Prosser equals Walker, Kloppenburg is the anti-Walker, and people who campaigned in favor of her put it in those terms.
Even though the people that wrote that probably didn't know Joanne Kloppenburg.
Probably not.
Couldn't pick her out of a...
She was just a vehicle.
Candidate lineup.
She was a vehicle. She was what was convenient. You know, the protest had had wound down, and folks were upset about the Walker administration, were looking for the next thing, and that's collecting signatures for recalls, and it's voting in whatever election happens to come next.
Yes.
It was Kloppenburg. I've never seen handwritten signs in people's windows and yards in a presidential race, a mayor's race, this kind of grassroots, you know, productivity and energy, that was all about Walker.
Well, you guys don't live in the Capitol as kind of I do for my job. Are you surprised that there are still noon protests? And when I came down for this show, I heard the last song they sang was Solidarity Forever. Huh. I mean, what does that tell you? That we're still seeing signs and protesters and noon rallies, although they're attended by 50, 60 people and not 4,000.
Right.
What's it mean? Is it a Dane County phenomena?
Oh, I don't think so. I think it's just very intense opinions on both sides. So the tax day rally this Saturday, Tea Party rally.
Yeah.
That's probably going to be pretty intense. I wouldn't expect there'd be 100,000 folks there, but I just think people's opinions are pretty intense.
Barry?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like this saga is not going to end. There's always a next item, and so
right,
I think the protests are at a fairly low level now, but could come back, probably not to the 100,000 level, but there's enough of a slow drip there that when the budget bill finally hits in the legislature, the recalls happen, something else, you could expect those numbers to swell right back up.
One follow-up question to the issue of whether we're seeing two Wisconsins politically. If we are seeing two Wisconsins politically, is that a split based on age? Is it a split based on income? Is it a split based on rural-urban? Thoughts on that?
One shocking thing is that the counties that are the two most extreme counties are Dane County for the Democrats and probably Waukesha or Washington County for the Republicans.
Right.
They look a lot alike demographically.
Yeah.
They have
so
much higher
in terms of income,
much higher incomes than average, much higher levels of education. At least on those factors, they look a lot alike. And those are the things that produce high turnout levels and a lot of interest and a lot of knowledge about the process. They just go in completely different directions.
Why?
So there are some other demographics. You know, Waukesha and Washington are whiter, more suburban. Madison has more young people, more unmarried people, folks from outside the state who maybe moved here for education or work or something else. So it's got to be those kinds of differences that are driving it. In the rest of the state, I think demographics are probably less important.
They are. Well, what about the idea that some of those northern counties are some of our poorest counties and some of southwest Wisconsin? The Grant and those areas are some of our poorest counties. Is that a reason that they're more than likely to vote for Democrats? It is.
Well, historically, typically, I mean, low-income folks tend to side with the Democratic Party. Still, I mean, there's, you know, a lot of talk around what's the matter with the Kansas book, and there's kind of a perception that those folks are going for the Republican Party, but that's not empirically true these days or factually true. The income has a lot to do.
The writer of that book was here in Madison covering the protests.
Really?
The writer of the book.
Yeah, great.
What's wrong? You made a point, and I admire you're going out to these coffee shops and diners and restaurants. Have you been able to get out much lately?
Not until the last few weeks, but actually just this morning I was out in a small community near Richland Center.
Okay. And talk about how you do that again.
Oh,
hi,
sure.
I'm from the UW, and I just want to listen, or what?
Well, these folks, they're used to me now. But
okay.
So generally what I do is I find out through a UW extension agent, usually, where in such and such a community do people hang out that I could just invite myself into. And so, say, a gas station around the coffee urns, I'll walk up and I'll say, hi, I'm Kathy Walsh, I'm from UW-Madison. Do you mind if I join you this morning? And they'll laugh and then welcome me in. And then we just...
They will.
Yeah, and then I'll just ask very general questions and listen to what they have to say.
And is that where you picked up on how angry they are on one side or the other?
Mm-hmm.
And is there any room for compromise there? And is this anger going to linger? That's another one of my questions.
Yeah. Oh, it's so hard to say.
Have you heard anecdotes, family splitting? And
sure. I mean, I've had, you know, students on campus come to me and say, I have this conflict in my relationship. They've been dating somebody for a year or so. I don't know what to do. Suddenly we realize we have very different attitudes about politics. And, I mean, the divides are pretty astounding.
I have a student this semester whose parent is a teacher in the Madison school system, and I think his views are different than her views, and he's come to me a couple of times asking about collective bargaining and benefits and the school system and charter schools and other options, and just trying to get his head around how he can be on one side and his parent, whom he loves, is on the other side. And I don't know how that's going to be resolved, but it's a tough situation for him.
What advice do you give him, Barry?
Well, I think information is the best thing you can have, you
know,
to avoid the kind of stereotypes and the polemics that sometimes come out. I think there's some room for compromise. You know, in the first Walker budget, the budget repair bill, there was a collective bargaining piece which caused all the controversy.
And still is.
But the first
still in court.
Yes. But the first part of that is asking public employees to pay more into pensions and into their health care. And I think very quickly the Democrats in the Senate and unions said we'd be willing to make that concession. Just please don't move on collective bargaining.
Right.
So I think if that was the terms of debate, we could have a reasonable discussion about how much should public employees be sacrificing, how do salaries stack up versus other benefits. And there, you know, I think families or the parties could get together. It becomes harder when you say, we'd like to undo collective bargaining, which has been in place for 50 years, and do that in a short period of time.
51 years. Wisconsin was the first one. So when a student comes to you and say, I have this conflict over this political issue, what do you tell she or he?
I say, you know, as much as you can, talk about it. Talk it out, because so much of the conflict are these stereotypes of where other people are coming from or what they think. And if only, I mean, the trick is to talk to each other with respect.
Mm-hmm. And to actually listen.
Yeah, that's right. That's probably the biggest key, listening.
One of the biggest emotional changes that I picked up in the Capitol is when the 14 Senate Democrats left. How do you think history will judge them as they took a strong position of principle, or this is the Republican line, they wouldn't show up for work? What are your thoughts?
I think it depends on who writes the history.
Okay.
I mean, it certainly focused attention on the collective bargaining issue.
It slowed that train. It really did.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're on the left, you say that made space for protesters to come out and make their voices known and express opposition to Walker. And if you're one of the Fitzgerald brothers, you say this is irresponsible legislator behavior and they should have stayed in the state and participated. But, you know, I'm not sure the two parties were talking in any serious fashion before they left. So I don't know how much would have been accomplished had they hung around. I think we'll have to wait and see.
A follow-up question. The Reagan Democrats, where are they now? And are they at the Tea Parties? What are your thoughts?
That's such a good question. And it's bewildering given, as you said, the union background to a lot of the Reagan Democrats. And we have a lot to learn yet about how people who are sympathetic to unions, what they're thinking right now. I mean, the folks who are sympathetic to unions and are at the protests, it's clear what they think, but there's a lot of people around the state who weren't at the Capitol necessarily, and I'm not really sure where they stand.
Yeah, I was trying to think of, you know, who the Reagan Democrat was. I think of those people as being union members, and there I feel like they've moved pretty strongly against Walker and Republicans. But there are other things, you know, I think of Reagan Democrats as being white, Catholic, married couples with kids, usually middle class, working class. And I'm just not sure where they're going to come down.
Yeah.
Those are real swing groups still today, 30 years later. So,
well, you watched some of those people in the Capitol. A lot of them weren't students from the other end of State Street. There were a lot of 30s and 40s, and there was a lot of union members who weren't members of public employee unions.
That's right.
You had the electrical workers and the steam fitters and
nurses. Yeah.
Right. Pretty amazing display.
Right.
I mean, one thing that's changed from the Reagan era to today is who union members are. They're disproportionately female is what
that's
I noticed.
A good point.
These are, you know, nursing, teaching, healthcare are just occupations where women are more represented, and so it's a different demographic today. So I'm not even sure the Reagan Democrats exist in the same fashion, but those are the groups who are most upset.
Now I'm curious, how would academics like yourself research where the Reagan Democrats have gone? How would you try to freeze them?
Oh boy, I guess
from a research standpoint.
will typically ask for recalling voting history, right? Asking people how they voted back then, and to track their behavior, political behavior, over time. But you'd have to ask them to recall it for you.
Or you might ask them what their parents' political attitudes were like. I think a lot of those Reagan Democrats were people who grew up in Democratic households in urban areas and at some point moved to the suburbs and became open to Republicans. So we'd have to, in surveys, ask for that kind of history, maybe not only of their votes, but of where their families were and whether they've drifted away from that or where they stand today.
So you just left a coffee shop this morning?
I did.
Well, here's my question. Are the people you broke bread with and had coffee, are they angrier at Madison or Washington?
Oh.
Did Washington come up?
No.
It didn't?
No.
Did anybody ask him? I mean, why didn't it? Because Paul Ryan is out front,
and
we just almost narrowly shut down the federal government, and now we have to agree on whether to raise the debt ceiling?
Uh-huh.
Does that tell you they're angrier at Madison?
In a way, yes. Although, this was one of the groups that said they basically said they valued their friendship so much they didn't really want to dig into the topic, and so they wanted to avoid it.
They didn't want to go there?
Yeah. The way they described to me is, you know, this is not an exact paraphrase, but, you know, we're a range of people here. We got public school teachers, we got farmers. We haven't talked about it ever through this whole thing. When somebody brings it up, we change the topic.
There really seem to be two kinds of reactions. Some people are drawn into this process, and they can't back out, and it's really overtaken them, and they're still on a daily basis reading the news, talking to people, writing their legislators, communicating on Facebook. And then there's this other group that says, I've just had enough, and I want to go back to normal life and get my kids to soccer practice and have my friends again and make dinner. And you know, I suspect that split will grow over time when we get to recalls and more budget issues and things down the road.
That's my next question. What do you think the last 100 days and all that it brought means for, next up is whether some state senators are going to be tossed out of office through the recalls. Beyond that, do you think there's any potential that there'll be a serious effort to recall the Governor Walker? And what do you think all this sets a table for 2012? That's a broad question. Let's focus first on, do you look for some senators to be recalled as a result of this polarity?
I do. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the signatures turned in for a couple of them already.
Both ours, yes.
Yep, and there'll be some Democrats too. I think the Democrats who are targeting Republicans will have more success than the other way around, but there'll be races on both sides. You just need opponents. That's sort of the missing piece. Mm-hmm. But we might see 4, 5, 6 state senators in very competitive races maybe lose their seats.
Well, if you get 4, 5, or 6 barriers, you well know that could flip the Senate to Democrats.
Yeah, it changes the dynamic entirely.
So we're still watching history emerge?
Oh, I think for a good long
time. Do you
agree,
5 to 6 state senators?
I think so.
Seems possible. I think.
I think so, especially when you overlay the results from the Walker election with the Prosser-Klappenberg election, places that went for Walker went 5-10 percentage points for Klappenberg.
Klappenberg, big swing.
So, yeah.
Big swing.
Yeah. And they don't necessarily match up with the districts where there's recall efforts in place, but some of them do.
Now the R word, recall. We're a long way off because of our state law that says nobody can be recalled until you've been in office a year, but I want to get your thoughts. Is it possible that we're going to see a serious effort to recall a governor?
I say yes.
You do.
Those groups have been organizing already online and elsewhere. They have volunteers lined up who have pledged that when this process becomes possible to start in December, they're ready to go with clipboards to shopping malls and on street corners. And unlike the state Senate recalls, you can collect the signatures basically anywhere in the state.
That's right. You don't have to be a resident because you're a resident of Wisconsin.
That's right. So go to big cities where there's a population that's easy to grab on the street and where they're probably more sympathetic to the recall, in Madison, Milwaukee, Green Bay, Racine, Kenosha, wherever. And you've got to get half a million signatures. I think it's possible.
So agree, Ken?
Absolutely. I mean, I've seen a lot of handmade recall Walker signs. And granted, I live in Madison, which is a bubble, but I'm talking about when I drive outside of Dane County.
Well, I was questioning that because I think one of the shortest things in the world is a voter's memory. And so when they're asked next January to sign this petition to recall Walker, they're still going to be angry, team?
Depends on what happens between now and then, I think.
I think there's still going to be anger. It may be diffused a little bit if the economy picks up and sort of, you know, general conditions and Walker benefits from that. You know, if we have recalls of state senators this summer, then this stuff stays in the news. If we have budget votes in the legislature this
summer.
That's
my next subject, yes.
Yeah. Yes. So I don't think it's going away anytime soon. And then they can start collecting signatures in December. So it's really not that far away.
Wow. Well, look into November of 2012. Any predictions on what happens then?
Oh, boy.
Walker's not up unless there's a serious recall. Do you think some of the foundations have been laid here for the Democrats to take either or both house of the ledge?
Very possible.
Oh, yeah, the swings we've seen in the last, 6 years? We've seen about every combination of
governor and
partisan control in the legislature. So
That's right.
Obama won by double digits in 2008, and then Walker comes back, and Ron Johnson knocks off Russ Feingold. I think anything's possible at this point.
Does all this mean there are fewer voters in the middle? You've heard it said there's 35 to 38 Ds and maybe 32 to 38 Rs, and it's really dependent by the middle. Is the middle shrinking?
It has temporarily, at least.
Okay.
I mean, there are very few people, according to some polls, 2% who don't have an intense opinion about Scott Walker, for example. 2%, which could be zero given the margin of error. And that's unusual. That's really unusual to have that few people who don't.
Yeah.
Usually you get roughly 30% saying, not really sure.
I think it was Craig Gilbert in the Journal Sentinel who pointed out that Walker had the most polarized ratings of any of the new governors.
Yes.
Just more people strongly in support of and even more people strongly opposed.
Okay.
So it's hard to come back from that.
Well, the next thing in the Capitol is passage of the governor's budget. Now, this is a budget that would cut aid to local schools by $1.084 billion. I should really be fair. It would cut aid to local schools and local governments by that amount, a record amount of cuts. Does passage of that budget, which I don't think is going to be rewritten in any major way, how's that going to break? Is it going to relight the passions and the fires that we saw in the window from mid-February through mid-March? Is it going to bring it all back?
Possible, but Walker's approval ratings are still in the 40s, right? And so there are a lot of people in the state who that's what they want. They see the fiscal situation in the state is really broken. They see what he's doing is taking some real concrete action, and there's support for that. So there's a lot of opposition to it, no doubt, but there's support for it. So I think it probably will relight the fires, but we have to keep in mind that it might light the fires on both sides.
Okay. Barry, agree?
Yeah, I think there's some mismatch between who's out on the streets doing things physically and who shows up at the polling place. I really was surprised Kloppenburg didn't win more votes last week. But that's because the physical activities we saw, signs and people on the street and that kind of face-to-face campaigning is not the same thing as voting on Election Day. There are plenty of parts of the state that support the Walker agenda and use the Prosser vote as a way to signal that without necessarily being a kind of visible presence.
Did either of you actually think Kloppenburg was going to win last week?
I did.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay.
I wasn't sure.
Okay.
I figured it would be very close. Not this close, but I thought it would be very close.
Not 7,000 out of 1.5 million.
Yeah.
Which is ten thousandths of a 1%. Is it a great time to be a political scientist, you guys?
Yeah, I think so.
Wisconsin?
Yes and no. Mostly yes. It's great fun, and people who aren't normally engaged in the details of politics suddenly want to know things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are the rules for a quorum in the state senate on fiscal bills,
or 20.
Or who publishes a law and decides that it's enacted? Is that the Secretary of State or somebody else?
Or is it a judge?
So being part of that discussion is wonderful.
You have the whole separation of powers issue. You have a circuit court judge stopping the legislature and the executive branch from publishing a law that they say was legally passed.
Yeah, it's been really fascinating. I've learned a ton, and it's always very gratifying when people value what you know and are asking you to help them figure out what's going on, what the heck is going on in your world.
Yeah, the only downside is trying to keep up with it.
I bet.
Yeah. The news is moving so quickly.
Welcome to our world as the Capitol Press Corps.
And thank you, Wisconsin Eye,
oh,
for
thank
helping
you.
Out.
Well, last question, we're almost out of time. What's the number one thing you're going to look for here in the political developments of the next 6 months? Barry? key?
Probably two things. One is what happens in the recalls, whether you get strong opponents running and what the turnout levels are and which way those things go. And the other is whether there are any Democratic votes for the Walker budget in the Assembly and the Senate to see whether there's some peel off there, or you get Republicans voting against. I think those will be good signs about what happens with the Walker recall, if that goes forward, and then 2012.
Thanks. I hadn't thought about whether there'll be any Dem votes for the budget. That's a key thing to look for.
Yeah.
Kathy, you're 6 months?
I would just add to that, I'm really curious about how people around the state are making sense of this. Kind of goes back to the people who are supportive of unions, where they're coming down, and beyond just people who are supportive of unions, but there's so many factors at play here. I just wonder what are people thinking?
Well, our next show in about 6 months, after we see whether there are any state senators are recalled, we'll have a lot to talk about, right?
That's for sure.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Barry Burton. Thank you, Kathy Kramer Walsh. I really appreciate your analysis of the last 100 days, and now we'll carry it forward a few months to see what that brings. Thanks.
Thanks.
Welcome.